Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Taking a look at the issues surrounding the health and well-being of our LGBTIQ plus communities. This is Well, 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 brought to you by the team from Thorn Harbour Health on Joy and the Community Radio Network.
You are listening to Well, 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 brought to you each and every week by Thorn Harbour Health, broadcasting on the lands of the Yalakut Wheelan clan of the Boonwurrung peoples. Each week we discuss the sexual health, mental health and the overall well-being of our sex, sexuality and gender diverse communities and people living with HIV communities. Recently, Victoria has seen a couple of new cases of Mpox appear in our community. Mpox, formerly known as monkeypox, is a viral infection that can result in symptoms like fever, headache, muscle aches, low energy, and swollen lymph nodes, similar to COVID or the flu, before passing on to a skin rash or lesions. A vaccination program began in 2022, and many in our community at risk for Mpox took up the vaccination to get protected. If you have had only one shot or are looking to get your first shot or simply want to know more about Mpox, head to thornharbour.org/Mpox. That's M-P-O-X. As we head into the cooler months, keeping well means rugging up, keeping warm, but also making sure that we keep protected from illnesses such as colds, flus, and COVID. Here to unpack what it means to keep well this winter is Arlo McDonald, practice nurse at Pronto and Equinox here at Thorn Harbour Health. It's a pleasure to have you on. Your first time appearing on Well Well Well, I believe.
It is, yes. God help us all.
Well, it is a delight to have you join us here to unpack what it means to keep well this winter. Before we get started, can you just tell us a little bit about you and your role here at Thorn Harbour Health?
Sure, yeah. I am a practice nurse, so I'm a registered nurse. I trained in Scotland, moved here a couple of years ago. I was incredibly lucky enough to get this role just in September last year. So although I've been nursing for about 6.5 years, I've just been working at Thorn Harbour in the GP clinic for last sort of 6 or 7 months.
Sure. And what does your role kind of entail kind of day to day at Pronto and Equinox? What are the kind of communities you look after and what does your role kind of entail?
Quick little bit of background. For anyone who doesn't know, Equinox is the trans and gender diverse clinic. So that is a general GP clinic aimed at supporting trans and gender diverse community. Pronto is a sexual health service aimed at men who have sex with men, trans and non-binary people. I am the practice nurse for both of those clinics. So I can have a really, really diverse day. It can be wildly different. So one moment it might be that I'm helping someone have an ECG done. So that's when you get like a little picture of the electrical patterns of your heart. The next step, it might be I'm having a discussion with someone about, you know, how do I reduce my risk of STIs, of HIV, of things like that. Next second, it might be more peer support. Maybe someone's come with some questions about, you know, hormone therapy, or this is the situation that's going on and I'm signposting them elsewhere. Just really, really varied days for me.
You really run the gamut downstairs here at 200 Hoddle Street. We are talking about keeping well this winter, and being May, flu season is kind of increasingly upon us. When we're thinking about getting protected from some of the bugs over winter, tell us why do we tend to get sicker over winter? It seems like a really kind of entry-level question. Why do we always seem to get sicker during the cooler months?
No, not at all. I think there's a lot of myths. So like one of the older myths used to be that the colder weather or getting caught in the rain. And actually, we know that's not true. It's generally now widely accepted. It is proximity. So we're all just indoors more, in smaller rooms, in smaller spaces, on top of each other, breathing and sharing our germs.
and potentially with less ventilation, you know, we don't have the windows open and we're kind of recirculating the same air.
It's colder, absolutely. You're more likely to close the window, pop the heater on, and all of that beautiful, delicious air is just swirling around in the room, things like that. There are new research studies coming out that also want to add to that something about moisture. So less moisture in the air, meaning that it is potentially easier for virus particles to enter the nose, but that is not my area of expertise and just what's on the wind at the minute.
Yeah, I definitely find that's true, you know, being in, you know, in an office all day and then going home and then being in kind of warm circulated air, nice and toasty. My skin gets really dry, my lips get really chapped, my nose gets really dry. So that kind of would stand to reason, I guess. Yeah. We sometimes use the term cold and flu kind of interchangeably when we start to get a little bit run down or we're feeling unwell. What does it mean to pick up a cold or, you know, the common cold versus actually, you know, picking up the flu?
That is such a good question. A cold is more of like an umbrella term for a set of symptoms that we would know, like, you know, cough, runny nose, maybe feeling a little bit feverish, just generally unwell. It tends to be much milder. It can be a whole host of different viruses like rhinovirus, enterovirus, that we all just would label them as the common cold. The flu is actually a specific set of viruses like flu A, flu B, and the symptoms are much, much worse and last for much longer. So generally in my mind, I think of a cold as like, I might be a little bit unwell for a couple of days. A flu, you can be talking about up to 2 weeks where you are really unwell, like in your bed, exhausted. You might end up needing hospital level care, you know, really quite significantly different. Similar symptoms initially, but as you tend to, after a few days, get better with the cold, with the flu, there's every potential that you're actually going to get a lot worse and you have a much longer journey.
Mm. So in terms of who's thinking about getting vaccinated this flu season, so would you say for those people who are immunocompromised, maybe have a disability, those people that might have a kind of a rougher time if they were to get unwell, then those people should be more cautious about, you know, making sure to get the flu vax every year?
Please, yeah, do. Please think about it. And if you're not sure, have a look online. There's like Better Health and the Australian Immunisation Handbook. They can give you some advice. Otherwise, please speak to nurses, speak to doctors. You can also go to like your local chemist or pharmacy. Pretty much all of them will do a flu vaccine. The main thing is that it's free for people with certain conditions or who are in a certain state. So for example, somebody is pregnant, it's really recommended that they get a flu vaccine to protect them and their baby, and it is free for that person. For anyone who is Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, flu vaccine is free for you, regardless of whether it's GP or chemist, please go. So if you're not sure, yeah, have a little look online or speak to a health practitioner. If you are online, small tip, if the website you're looking at has adverts down the side, or if it's trying to sell you something, I would not trust that website. So that's why I mentioned like Better Health. I know that that's a reputable website with good information.
Great. And we'll have a link to a whole bunch of different resources in our podcast notes, which you can find at joy.org.au/well. So we'll have a ton of those there for people to look for the appropriate informations. In terms of the way that things have changed in the last couple of years, we've learned a lot about respiratory illnesses through, you know, preventing them, especially during the peak of COVID when we didn't have access to the great vaccines that we do now. With that in mind, what can we take away from our response to COVID and apply it to keeping well just generally during winter?
It just goes to show that we can actually do the things that protect our community to take care of each other. So for example, wearing an N95 when you go to community events means you're not just protecting yourself, you're actually protecting all of those community members around you, which I think is wonderful. I acknowledge that there are some reasons some people don't wear N95s or aren't able to. So getting a flu vaccine is perhaps another step that you could take, either in addition to wearing a mask, or if you know that that's not something you can do. Those hand hygiene practices that everybody was on top of incredibly well. So hand sanitizing, anytime you've gone to the toilet, if you've sneezed into your hand, you've coughed into your hand, use a little bit of hand sanitizer or wash your hands with water and soap, and that will get rid of any virus particles and mean it's so much less likely to spread it. If you are gonna sneeze or cough, do so into a tissue. Then bin that tissue, wash your hands. If you don't have a tissue, and I know there's some differing opinions on whether you should sneeze into your elbow, whether you sneeze into your hands. My personal preference, because I always carry hand sanitizer, is I will sneeze into my hands, then immediately hand sanitize and I know it's gone. If I sneeze into my elbow, I can't really hand sanitize my elbow, but it's less likely to touch other things. So
sure.
Weigh up in your own mind what you think is best.
Alo, I want to talk a little bit more about the flu and the flu vaccine. The flu is different from some other bugs where, you know, you might get a single course, you know, when you're at school, for instance, maybe you get a top up later in life, but generally you kind of stay protected. That's not the case for influenza, is it? You kind of need those regular boosters every year.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Every year, the sort of DNA structure of flu, it's very unique in that each year it changes slightly or it mutates. So the vaccine that we had last year, in between the time of last year and now, that virus strain will have changed. The flu virus will have changed itself so that it can, you know, find sneaky ways around those previous vaccines, which is why every year they update the vaccine. They have a look at some of the more common strains and they pick four, generally speaking, the four top strains of flu and use that to create the vaccine for that year. So this year's vaccine is going to be slightly different to last year's. That is why it's really, really worth getting it every year if you can, if it is appropriate for you.
Yeah. We were talking before the break about who might be more at risk for, you know, debilitating flu experiences. And obviously people who are immunocompromised could have a potentially rougher time if they were unvaccinated. Is there anyone who should be, when thinking about getting a flu vaccination or any other kind of vaccination, that should be cautious about getting them, or anyone that we don't recommend get the flu vaccine?
Absolutely. So anyone who has ever had an anaphylactic reaction to flu vaccines in the past, and this is quite a serious symptom, so it involves things like swelling of your throat, lips and tongue, difficulty breathing, anything like that. If you've ever had any kind of reaction to a flu vaccine, please, you know, speak to a doctor before you go and get one. Every time anyone goes to get a flu vaccine, there is a set checklist that either the nurse, doctor, pharmacist will run through with you to make sure that you aren't in that very small group of people who shouldn't have it. There are some people who, yeah, maybe they don't know yet, they might have an allergic reaction. The risk is very, very, very small, but it is why we have that checklist there. So if you're not sure, have a look online or know that when you come to see us, we'll check with you beforehand to make sure that you are a safe person to get this flu vaccine.
If I've recently had COVID, how long should I wait until I'm, you know, eligible for my next round of boosters if those are kind of coming up?
Amazing question. Until you feel back to your normal. And I know, like, what does normal even mean, Arlo? I just mean, like, when you feel well in yourself, so you've not got any symptoms of COVID anymore, so you're testing negative, you don't have that runny nose or, like, fevers or anything like that, I can acknowledge that the cough from COVID can hang around a little while. So again, generally, if that person says, actually, you know, I'm completely fine, I'm well, I'm eating, I'm drinking, I've been fine for a couple of weeks, I have a small tickle in my throat, but I'm otherwise fine, I'd say perfect. Otherwise, generally, yeah, until all of your symptoms are gone, that's what I'm looking for.
Alo, I wanted to ask about things have changed in the last couple of years in terms of we went through the worst of COVID. Thankfully, we're on kind of the other side of the worst of that. But with testing requirements and mask mandates and all of those mandatory vaccinations kind of being relaxed now, it can kind of be easy to forget that COVID is still around. What should people know about boosters generally and, you know, moving into the long term, how frequently do we need to think about getting boosted for COVID?
I think that if there are some of us who are able to forget about COVID, that is a very privileged position to be in. And I would like to acknowledge that not everyone is able to have those moments where they forget COVID exists. There are members of community who aren't in that situation and won't ever be. But in terms of COVID boosters, so the recommendations have changed slightly in recent times. If you're not sure, please, by all means, you can go online to the Australian Immunisation Handbook. That is free. It is available to anyone and you can check. But for most people, it is recommended that between the ages of, you know, 18 and 65, if you are well, you can consider a yearly booster, so up to every 12 months, but you don't have to. If you are immunocompromised for any reason and appropriate for a COVID booster, you can still consider it up to every 6 months. I appreciate that is changing. So yeah, please do check everything I'm saying online. It's there for everybody. If you're not sure, check online, speak to your nurse, speak to a doctor, speak to a pharmacist who does immunizations, any of the above.
Beautiful. And since some people have gotten their most recent COVID booster, I know at the end of 2013, there were some new, more specific COVID vaccination boosters that kind of came out. What do those kind of look like, and how does that kind of keep us protected?
Ah, so the vaccines are changing slightly in similar ways to the flu vaccine, where actually now there's more than one strain in the COVID vaccines. I want to be really clear, I don't pretend to know everything. I have a little bit of information on most things, so please, you know, feel free to question me, question your nurse, question your doctor on this. But my understanding is that a lot of the original, you know, first, second generation COVID boosters were single strain or based on kind of that first protein spike that we knew of. And in more recent times, we've got this third generation booster that has got multiple strains in it, like the flu vaccine, where they've had a look at the most common versions around and gone, okay, we know that these are the ones that are now impacting people the most. It makes the most sense to help protect people against these strains instead of just this one older strain.
Arlo, I wanted to ask about, you know, we're thinking about keeping well this winter season. We're talking about preventing COVID. We're talking about preventing flu. But our communities do like to get together. We like to mingle. For those people who are looking to continue having a really happy, productive, pleasurable sex life at this time, how can we still remain sexually active and have all that fun pleasure, but also reduce our risk of, you know, picking up flus or Mpox or anything like that?
Oh, that's such a good question. That is exactly the kind of question that I'm lucky enough that I get to deal with day in, day out at work. All right, so this would depend a lot on the individual. So I'd probably want to get to know, like, hey, what are your goals? When you are talking about this, where are you most likely to be spending your time? It's going to be contextual to each circumstance. For example, if you're going to a community event, I'm going to recommend you can wear an N95 mask. Now, I know for a lot of people, when they're thinking about sexy fun times, an N95 mask is probably not the first thing that's going to pop into their mind in terms of like sexy things I can put on before I go out. So it might be things like the vaccine. You know, if you are appropriate, if you are eligible, please by all means consider getting your COVID booster or consider getting your Mpox vaccine before you go out into community. There are other additional steps I know that some people are choosing to take. So for example, using a nasal washout, that is not something I would routinely recommend. But if you're doing your own research and you find things and you want to chat with a professional about it, we can absolutely sit down and go through what's going to work for you. In terms of sex itself, I would say that different sex positions are going to have slightly different levels of risk. So for example, if you're in a position where you are very much, you know, face to face, a few centimeters apart, or if you're doing a lot of kissing and things like that, that's going to be higher risk than, say, if you weren't kissing, if you were facing away from each other and that was different. But it's not a guarantee. Nothing is a guarantee that you definitely won't get any viruses. So yeah, it would probably be like, have that conversation. Don't be shy. Please, by all means, ask me, ask the nurse, ask the doctor. Hand hygiene. Hand hygiene is so, so important. So particularly with any event that you're doing, if you are, you know, going between multiple partners, just being thoughtful about that. I know a lot of us would hopefully already have some basic etiquette about if you are sharing toys, if you are, you know, sharing bodily fluids and things like that. There's cleanup processes. If you do want to know a little bit more about that, by all means, have you heard of Down and Dirty? That is an incredible website. I do want to give people a little bit of a warning. It's a very graphic website. There are very clear images and words of people doing sexy, fun things. But there's a bit of information on there about reducing risk of things like HIV. What about COVID? There's a really great section on there that is so worth having a glance through. And that information is aimed at men who have sex with men and trans and non-binary people. So have a little read there. It'd be a good place to start, I think.
And if you head to Down and Dirty, which is DOWNANDIRTY, downanddirty.org, if you land on the website, it will warn you before you. You won't just be affronted with things. There will be a screen that will tell you, heads up, there's some raunchy material here before you proceed. So you'll be well warned before you're affronted with anything too, you know, hyperventilating. Now, I want to shift away from COVID just quickly to talk about a bug that some people might not know a lot about, which is RSV, or respiratory syncytial virus?
Syncytial virus.
What does RSV do, and is it very different to the flu? How does it kind of operate?
Okay, so in terms of presentation, they look exactly the same. For most people, you can't really tell the difference. For background, I spent 6 years working in pediatrics as a children's nurse in hospitals. So I was dealing particularly every winter with a huge amount of babies and toddlers who would come in with RSV. But generally in most people, the symptoms are the same as a cold, the same as a flu. It is something that it can really make young people, so people under the age of 5 or people over the age of 65, the chances of you being admitted to hospital and being really, really unwell because of RSV are very, very high. People who are between sort of 5 and 65 with a healthy immune system, you're gonna feel rubbish. You're gonna feel not great. But most people will be able to take care of themselves at home with hot fluids and rest. In terms of, you know, really serious long-term outcomes, it doesn't really affect healthy adults quite so much as flu. So I was actually chatting to one of the GPs about this morning, and he was explaining it to me that the flu, in terms of really serious impact long-term outcomes, it tends to affect everyone kind of the same across the board, young, middle, older. RSV is really like, for young people, it's a really high impact. And then for sort of healthy adults, not so much. And then older adults, big high impact. So they're the people that are most likely to end up needing hospital level care and having serious outcomes if they don't get treatment and support early on. Adults, we tend to be, if we're well in our immune system, able to get over it ourselves. Unlike flu, where we all kind of have a similar risk of being really, really unwell and needing hospital-level care. Does that make sense?
Yeah. In terms of people that might have had the flu vaccination, does that provide you any protection against RSV, or completely separate?
Completely separate, yeah. There is, they are developing and have developed, an RSV vaccine, which is currently not available in Victoria. I can't speak about other states. I do believe there might be other states who have funded it now. But for Victoria, it is currently only available for adults over the age of 60 with a private prescription. And I don't know, most people might not know this. Vaccines are actually seriously expensive. So if you did want to buy it, I absolutely would support that. It is only for people above 60, and it would be about, $320 for that single vaccine, and it would be a yearly booster, is my understanding of it. Watch this space. I don't know if that will change, but that is the current situation for RSV. Different vaccine, different virus.
Gotcha. And if you jump into our podcast notes, we'll have a little bit of information about RSV and what we currently know. And then, as you've mentioned, Arlo, it's a bit of a watch this space in terms of the ever-evolving landscape of vaccine availability and price structures and schemes that kind of roll that out and make it more accessible to people. So just to clarify, for those people that might be considering a private prescription, it's really for, you know, mostly for older folk. What about for, you said that children were kind of young, children were kind of impacted. Are they able to access the vaccine? Probably not themselves. They would probably have a parent access it for them, I presume.
I would assume that their parent would need to look into it. Honestly, at this point, I would have to go back online myself and double check that information and have a look. I would be going straight to my Australian immunization handbook. And if it wasn't there, I'd be checking the Better Health website to see what their most recent advice on it was.
Now, before we let you go, Arlo, I just wanted to ask, this can be about vaccinations, it can be about anything else. Can you share with us just one of your kind of like winter wellness tips? What do you do to kind of look after yourself during the cooler months?
Oh my gosh. Would you know what a hot toddy was?
I know what a hot toddy is.
That is my ultimate go-to if I'm feeling a little bit under the weather. But a pro tip for anyone, it's generally made with a little bit of whiskey, not to continue stereotypes of Scottish people. But if you aren't a big fan of whiskey, maybe you just don't like the taste, maybe you're not an alcohol drinker, by all means, replace it with ginger. It's like a good, healthy dose of ginger. Oh my gosh, that will knock a cold out of the park. And if it doesn't, you might need to be thinking it's a bit more serious than a cold. But for me, yeah, lemon juice, hot water, honey, and ginger in a glass. Oh, that's something about that just makes me feel like at home. Yeah. And so comfortable and warm. But if you are having the version with whiskey, not before work.
Not before work.
Yes, that's definitely once you've got home.
You're in for the night. Beautiful. Alu, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. Before we do let you go, one last thing. If someone wants to inquire about getting their flu shot or if they want more Mpox info, I know you've mentioned it a couple of times, but where can people find out more about the work that Pronto and Equinox does and get some flu and vaccination info?
Oh, thank you. I have tried to. I know I've been a little bit of a broken record on this, but general Thorn Harbor info is available on the Thorn Harbor website. So you just Google Thorn Harbor Health. It is going to come up with the website, and it has different sections. There's a section about HIV, sexual health. There's a section about Pronto and about Equinox, about what we do and just health generally. Other options are the Better Health website. So that is the government-run website with the Department of Health, where they have all of the most up-to-date information for the state of Victoria and what the recommendations are here. If you wanted to know about vaccinations specifically, there is the Australian Immunisation Handbook. Otherwise, any GP clinic that you can go to, you can sit and have a chat with the doctor there. You might also have the option of a practice nurse like myself. So I have been lucky enough to do a little bit of extra training. So I am also a nurse immunizer, which means I can give vaccines to people who are eligible through the National Immunization Program, if that clinic has a nurse who can do that. And you can ask at reception or when you call to book up, who can I speak to about vaccines? Book in. We're not, we try to be as nice as we can. And I will always say to people, even if we just have a phone appointment and at the end of that phone appointment, you decide it's not for you, that is absolutely fine. I'm just psyched to get to have the conversation with you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Alu McDonald, practice nurse at Pronto and Equinox at Thorn Harbour. Thank you so much for joining us here on Well 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 for Joy and the Community Radio Network. If you've got any questions, feel free to email those through to wellwellwell@joy.org.au and check out our podcast notes, joy.org.au/wellwellwell, to get all of the links we've mentioned in this week's episode. Until next week, we will see you later.
Thanks for listening to Well Well Well, supported by Thorn Harbour Health on Joy and the Community Radio Network. For more LGBTIQ+ health and wellbeing and much more, check out Thorn Harbour on social media at Thorn Harbour or via the website thornharbour.org.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.